You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So why do you people want us to stay at the temple?
We're protecting you.
From what?
You've been on this island a while, right? Ever see a big pillar of black smoke, makes a ticka-ticka sound, looks pissed off?
Yes.
From that. Do you know anything about another plane coming in? An Ajira flight?
I'm sorry, is this a press conference?
I think he means the one that landed.
Justin! Shut up.
No, that's a decoy trail. He went this way.
And you're basing this on what?
Experience.
Aldo.
What?
I think she's right.
Of course she is. After you, princess. So what's your strategy for bringing your boyfriend back? I hope you got one because he shot a guy on his way out. If he tries that on me, I'm going to blow his head
off. Watch it.
Thank you.
Looks like one of Russo's traps.
The French woman? She's been dead for years. This couldn't be one of...
Justin! Shut up.
What was he going to say?
You don't even remember me, do you? You don't recognize me? Well, maybe this will jog your memory. 3 years ago, you staged yourself a little prison break. And you did it by knocking the guard out with the butt of your rifle. That would be me.
What are you doing?
Escaping.
Is over, but we have to go back down the hatch. It's the Lost Rewatch Podcast here on Post Show Recaps, talking season 6, episode 3, What Kate Does. And what Kate does is punch stupid Aldo right in his little dumb face. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by Mike Bloom. And Mike, it's always sunny in Philadelphia, but times are a little bleak here on the island.
The weather conditions are probably the best thing going for everybody. But yes, I wanted to include this as the intro, as one of the rare bright spots of this episode. Speaking of sunny, welcome back, Rob McElhenney as Aldo, albeit a much, much, much more jerkish version of Aldo when we saw him back in season 3, albeit much more of a limited capacity. But yeah, what Kate does, she completely knocks the crap out of him and poor Justin.
What does Kate do? You know... What does Kate do is a good question that's worth asking.
This is not a great title of the episode. And we're going to get this with Everybody Loves Hugo, right? This idea of like, ooh, let's take little quirky titles and tweak them because, again, this is the final round the blocks for Lost. Everybody Loves Hugo, I think, makes a lot more sense. What Kate does, I mean, I suppose quite literally applies to what happens in the episode, But What Kate Did is not only a much stronger title, but in my opinion, probably an even stronger episode of Lost than What Kate Does is.
I think What Kate Does is a bad episode of Lost. I think it is probably, it is the worst Kate episode, second only to whatever the case may be for me, but honestly, competitive. I think the biggest issue here is going to be the temple stuff. We've already talked about that ad nauseum, that we're like really low on the temple right now, that we're feeling pretty drained with the temple stuff. And it's only, I guess, technically three episodes in. and that's tough. That's tough that things already feel kind of that wobbly. It's sort of like an aimless episode in many ways, I feel like. The plot line is Kate is going to chase after Sawyer, but it doesn't totally feel like that. There's the flash sideways stuff that's going to be basically like Kate and Claire's reunion, even though it is not like their actual on-island reunion. But it's going to be Kate running away from the law and then realizing that she was a jerk to the pregnant woman whose taxi she hijacked, so she should be better to her. There's really no major arc to it. At least most of the sideways episodes, I feel like, internally have an arc. I'm not sure that this one does, or at least not one that is like immediately popping for me, so we'll have to talk it through. I think that this is just looking at the batch of, and I'm just like front loading my feels here. Just looking at like the run of season six episodes, I do think this is my least favorite episode of season six.
Wow, even below Across the Sea, where we placed it?
For sure. So I think I'm probably going to ultimately rate this higher, though maybe not. I don't know. I put it at a 2.3 for Across the Sea, right? And I said that large part is because it's a Legacy Lost number. But then I was watching this episode, I was like, I'm definitely enjoying this less. Across the Sea is at least interesting. At least they are aiming for something here. I think that this is like effectively second episode jitters. It's like, oh shit, we are in the final season. What the hell are we doing? What do we do?
And this is something we've talked about with Lost in general, though. I mean, going back to the very first Kate episode of Taboo La Raza. Yeah, there always seems to be like the first episodes, no matter how long they are kick ass. And then there is some sort of significant step down, with maybe the exception of something like Confirmed Dead.
Right.
All of our episode twos have been at least like almost a 0.5 drop off from premiere to episode two. And I think it's a very similar case here of like we hit the ground running and we slow things down for this episode. And it's an odd shift of momentum. And it's interesting. This goes back to my own viewing experience at the time of season six versus now. I remember at the time watching this, I was so intrigued by the on-island stuff and sort of like, get me away from the off-island stuff. I don't care about what Kate's doing in this world where she's running away. Like, Sayid's alive. What the hell does that mean? They want to poison him? What's inside him? You know, all this stuff about Sawyer, really rich character material. Now watching it, it has completely flip-flopped, with maybe the exception of the Sawyer stuff, which again has a really great scene for Josh Holloway. I think the sideways stuff is the meatier material. I mean, this is very fatty meat no matter where you're cutting it. But I would say on the whole, I would much rather watch the off-island stuff, and specifically that Kate-Claire relationship, which we genuinely have not seen since season three, come about, albeit in a different form than we're expecting. But I do think, maybe on paper, looking back at it, especially in the way everything ends, it's important for Kate's arc for her to have this sort of deja vu-esque reconnection with Claire. I think it helps substantiate what happens in Whatever Happened, right, where it's revealed why she came back to the island. I think something that is tough, and we talked about this a bit during our weekly viewing that we do with the patrons over at the Discord level. If you're a $10 patron of Post Show Recaps, you can watch the episodes alongside us.
Patreon,
please do. Very fun time.
Patreon.com/Post Show Recaps, as always.
Exactly. But one argument that I sort of realized is, I think Kate, we talked about this in one Whatever Happened, her arc isn't completed. You know, she hasn't gotten Claire off the island with her, but we sort of like see her end goal, right? Like, she was one of the most fully completed characters to return on that Ajira flight. She had a mission, Aaron had changed her permanently, and now she knew what she had to do. And so that's a little different to me than someone like Jack, who also has a unique perspective in this episode, right? Like, still trying to figure out that purpose, trying to figure out how to navigate this brand new setting. And so I could imagine the writers are like, okay, we got to have a Kate episode, but like, what the hell do we do with it? And unfortunately, I think the result is this episode.
Yeah, I think that it is a mostly not good episode of Lost for me. I think I've seen like a couple of ratings that are like relatively high. And I think that in large part, my guess would be that like that Sawyer and Kate scene on the pier especially is really, really, really good. I think Eat, like obviously for Josh Holloway, but I think it's actually a really great Evangeline Lilly acting scene. And that always makes me happy to get one of those. So I am I'm thinking that there's a little bit of an acting bump, but for me, like I do feel like, and I like I don't want to like I'm trying not to bag on the creative. I think like you're getting into the final season, there's so much anticipation behind it, like I think like it can be a little hard to know like what you're supposed to do, what you're going to do here, but this does have this quality of like there is much like Kate, she runs, right? And she's like running in circles. They're, like the show feels like it's doing that same thing. And then the temple stuff is like close to unforgivable for me. Like the temple stuff is really just like total trash for me.
This is harkening back to the first half of the series. Like, well, we don't know what to do with the B plot. So we're just going to have everyone kind of spin their wheels, to use another metaphor. And again, it's a little unforgivable, in my opinion, in the sixth season, the final season of a show. After seasons 4 and 5 did such a great job of, I think, propelling so much in terms of both plot and character, I think to sit in the back pocket and spend an entire episode at the temple where it's like, okay, we're going to help treat Saeed, but we don't know exactly what's happening, and we're not going to actually refer to anything about it or answer any questions about it is frustrating at best, in my opinion.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about. I think we're going to do it we're going to like try and get through this episode as quickly as possible.
Rip off the band-aid.
You know, because like I think like there are some things that move the needle and are definitely worth like stopping down and like doing like the super close examination. But more than most episodes this season, I think that this one is, as you love to say, Mike, big fat nothing burger. And there are a couple of other episodes this season that I think have like a not dissimilar vibe, but I think this one coming so early is gonna make it the harshest one for me, is my instinct. We'll see when we get deeper in. I won't say which ones I'm looking at, but with all of that said, let's go forth into the jungle. Let's talk about what Kate does. To your point, should they have tried to like flip a different Kate episode? Should they have done like, instead of Left Behind, they should have done like Right Ahead?
Yeah, like the exact opposite. Do they say bad bye instead of goodbye?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there something to whatever the case may be?
Instead of born to run, should it have been killed for walking?
Yeah, I'm walking here. Could that have been the name of the episode?
Yeah, born to run, mirrored with I'm walking here. Yeah.
I like that.
You know, at least you get an episode. You get a quote from the episode as the title would be pretty good. All right. It's a Kitsis and Horowitz joint. It originally airs February 9th, 2010. It is focused on the Sideways, Kate Austin. And as we begin, we start in as riveting a way as humanly possible. There's your boy Lennon, and he's running. Born to run.
Running barefoot. We should note here that I do believe, I don't know if it's all the temple people, but at least some significant portion of them are barefoot. So I guess what Echo and Jin saw in the bushes ends up bearing out with the temple people, at least.
Yeah, maybe that's who they saw once upon a time, was the temple others.
Yeah, I know that was something that was theorized. We have a listener, Mike Edwards, who's going through our podcast. He's reached the ooh and found stuff, and I believe that's been re-theorized. That could be the case. They were going like a little field trip outside of the temple, and they happened to run into this group. But God, these guys are such hipsters. They're such freaking
cool.
Lost. Like, Dogen's typing on a freaking typewriter. Like, what is the purpose of that? What are the communiques for, really, Dogen? Yeah. I'm so frustrated with Dogen in this episode.
Yeah, the internal logic of the Temple Others, really, it's very, very hard for me to track. So I think that I have given up trying. And I know that that might be frustrating, because, like, you listen to the podcast probably, right? So, like, what can you add to the show? What can you put this and this together? And it's like, I don't know that I can. I really don't. Maybe the final season coverage of Down the Hatch will be as frustrating as the final season of Lost for some people. I'm not really thinking about trying too hard with the Temple Others. I'm just trying to follow the show's lead. So Lennon comes to Doug and he says, he's alive. And Saeed is indeed alive. Hurley goes to hug him. I thought it'd be funny if he just like accidentally smothered Saeed because he's too aggressive with him.
I think we're going to get sort of a machine that Saeed gets put on that is reminiscent of the Princess Bride when Wesley becomes mostly dead. Like, I wanted Hurley to be an Andre the Giant and like throw mostly dead Saeed over his shoulder and like have to carry him around for the rest of the season. Yeah.
The Dread Pirates draw. Yeah, that would be really funny. He's coming for your soul.
Imagine like they scare away Smokey by having Saeed stand on or having Hurley stand on Saeed's shoulder or sit on a wagon that's being carted around. I think that would be a fun way to end the series, personally.
I like that. So Saeed's feeling a little lightheaded. Other than that, he's fine, even though, as Jack tells him, like, but dude, you just died. Meanwhile, Kate and Sawyer are watching from the sidelines, and Kate's like, how is this possible? You know, mirroring the question that so many of us have, although not anymore, obviously, because we know that Jack's superpowered CPR is what brought Saeed back from the brink, and he never actually died. This moment from Sawyer is like this very fine line between season one Sawyer and like who Sawyer is now. Like, it is sort of like when he says about Saeed, of course he's fine. He's an Iraqi torturer who shoots kids. He definitely deserves another go around. And I think that like there is like that bit of season one Sawyer in him with like the way that he's disparaging Saeed. But then I think that there is the version of Sawyer who went through the 3 years of the Dharma Initiative and like being in like a mature, loving relationship and being somebody who learned how to like accept love and be loved and give some love back as well. That is recognizing like this person is a child murderer. You know, he tried to kill a kid. And like, of course, Juliet's dead, but this guy gets another shot. Beautiful. Wonderful. We love this. So I feel like it is sort of like this merging of Sawyer across space and time for me.
Yeah, well, you know what it really reminds me of? Like, the way Sawyer is regarding Saeed here, this idea of he definitely deserves another go-around, and even last episode, right, when he's like, I'm not going to kill Jack because he deserves to suffer on this rock like the rest of us, Sawyer is really embodying Anthony Cooper for me. Specifically, the little hot for heaven, you know, the first and last time they have a conversation together. And I wonder how much Sawyer is calling back to that moment, because I agree. I think it's not necessarily a reversion. I think it is a little bit of that season one attitude, but without the bite. This idea of like him actually being really an a-hole to everybody. I think it's more so pessimistic, like bleak outlook on life, Sawyer, because of him losing Juliet, because, you know, it didn't work according to at least what the plan was in the moment. So I think that Sawyer has a certain way that he's behaving at this point, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's thinking about the OG Sawyer echoing back to that idea of like, hey, you know what, maybe we are all in hell and we're being punished for it, and Sawyer feels personally punished, which I think also factors into obviously one of those leading theories and fundamental misunderstandings about the series.
I really like that comparison, that like that is now like not like now that he's like he like his life is basically over and he's back on like the island, quote unquote, even though he was already there, but like it was a different thing, it was a different time. That I feel like him having like this moment to kind of like go back sort of into like the nightmarescape that was the brig, and that like getting to like live rent free in his head again, like the possibility of are we all just in hell, I think is a really interesting way of looking at him. I like that a lot. He's telling Kate like he's like clocked all the numbers of Temple Others here. He's thinking about running. He thinks he can overpower them. I'm thinking about running, Kate. And in the sideways, Kate's not just thinking about running, she's doing it. She's hijacking a cab. She's got Claire. She's telling the taxi driver to drive. We're still at LA Space X.
Yeah, but she also tells him to slow down, and he is very understandably confused. Like, but wait, you said go. It should also be noted here that you think they use the exact same dialogue from LA Space X, but apparently it's very different. So I guess Kitsis and Horowitz just didn't correspond with Darlton of like, hey, can you just like send me the last page of your script so we can sort of compare notes here?
Yeah. So maybe that is like playing a little bit to the unreality. We see Arst get in the way of the taxi cab. He's got all of his bags and he's so annoyed. I'm walking here.
I love it. I love that of all people, Arst is the one to slow them down, right? But it's, I mean, not really, because she makes the guy drive over Arst's luggage. So, like, all his entire coterie of packages are just, like, all of a sudden dragged under this taxi cab.
It's not good. Claire's trying to get out. She's not getting out. But the taxi driver totally gets out after he runs over Arst's bags. He leaves at the red light, which is hilarious. Kate gets in the front. She takes it over.
It's really, Kate's behavior in this is really strange, and I guess you could say, like, it's the attitude of she doesn't know what she's doing, so it's a little sloppy, because, like, in this moment, she refuses to let Claire out of the cab, then the taxi driver runs out, and so she's like, okay, you can leave now. It's an odd set of three actions of like, okay, if the cab driver leaves, why don't you just let her out then instead of getting into the front seat, waiting about 10 seconds and saying, okay, now you get out. I guess it just speaks to how slapshod she is. She's not really planning this stuff through. She just needs to get away as soon as possible.
She's going to say to Claire at the end of the episode, what if I told you I was innocent? Would you believe me? In the sideways, do you buy her innocence?
Well, I believe what happens in the sideways is that she fails to blow up Wayne, and instead, incidentally, a plumber gets blown up. So I'm no lawyer. I do technically believe she is guilty of, like, manslaughter.
She should go to prison for this, probably.
Exactly. But, like, I guess she's applying, like, no, I'm innocent because I didn't specifically kill the person I wanted to kill. But I still think she's guilty in a pretty big way.
She's trying to kill someone. Someone else died.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, that's not good. That's not good. She kicks Claire out of the car, takes her purse, and books it. So back on the island, we're seeing Jack and Jin and Hurley. They're helping, Saeed outside. Hurley's catching, Saeed up on everything that's happening. He says, the others caught us again, dude, but they're trying to protect us this time, I think. And Miles has this great line, as you can see, Hurley has assumed a leadership position.
Yes. I love that Miles, like, read the script for the end, right?
It.
He's like, I know how this series ends.
As you can see, Hurley is the main character now. is great. Really, really great. So I just love that sort of, like, winking and nodding towards the end of the series. That's, like, a legitimately fantastic thing in this episode. Not only is Saeed alive, Mike, but his wound has completely closed. And if you look at the scar, it looks like a kiss.
Did Bopo come in?
Maybe.
Both Bopos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they, whatever is the same cloning technology they use to clone the multiple Bopos is what's in the water here at the temple. Listen, season 6 is full of callbacks, Mike. Who are we to not call back to the time that we talked about the possibility that Bopo was cloned?
Yeah, could this be a thing where actually Saeed is becoming infected, but he's turning into a Bopo?
Oh my god, yeah, if like the arc was allowed to complete that Saeed would turn into a Bopo by the end of it, if not
yeah,
for what
exactly.
happens in the submarine.
Like, he just grows ears, like he's like, oh, I have the desire to lick my butt all
he's
of a sudden.
Like he's like a were-dog?
Yeah, like he turns into a dog, yeah. Like Tim Allen in The Shaggy Dog.
He's like a were-Bopo. I love this idea that Saeed is on a journey towards becoming a canine. I think is interesting.
Yeah, and then like him and Vincent run off together at the end. They become best of buds.
He becomes very loyal to the man in black, right? Like, you know, very obedient, like a well-trained animal. Is he on his way towards becoming a Bopo? I think is a worthy question indeed. Saeed's going to thank Jack for saving his life, but like the conversation, the sweetness is called off when Dogen and Lennon and the temple others roll up. I think this is where I'm noticing for the first time that Dogen's always holding his shirt.
Yeah, well, specifically, it's that he has a vest on and he has one hand on like the rim of a vest, like if you were a kid in a high school play and you have a vest on and you're like, all right, you've got to look official. And so what do officials do? They hold
their
vest. That is that's Dogen's position of power. Is he always has one hand clutched on his vest for whatever reason.
He's like a sixth grader playing the mayor. right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, hold on here, folks.
Yeah. Well, how am I going to convince people I'm just a sixth grader? Well, if I hold my vest, perhaps they will know that I command authority.
And maybe that just shows, again, this episode's going to prove, like, just how much of a man behind the curtain, he's a Pharisee, Dogen is. And maybe that was the first indicator, is that he's very much acting like someone he's not.
It is so important for me, if not for the audience, then at least for myself, to continuously say out loud how much I love as an actor Hiroyuki Sanada, how much I love as an actor John Hawkes. I love them both. I think they're great performers. I think they're excellent. It is not working. It is not working here. As Dogen and Lennon come out, they want Saeed to come inside. Jack has some questions. He starts giving them some guff. They give him some guff back. A fight breaks out.
Oh, this is terrible. This is... I had to rewind it several times just to, like, gawk at its gloriousness.
Oh my god, you've lived long enough to see yourself become the gawker.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just like, specifically
the
shot. You
either die an 815er or live long enough to become a gawker.
And then summarily go down and fire arrows. But there's this one shot where they, like, push Miles up against the wall that looks terrible, and, like, one of them just sort of, like, jostles Hurley slightly. It's very clear that they gave them no guidance. They just told these temple others, like, yeah, just rough them up a little bit. And these guys are like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. Okay, tussle, tussle, tussle. I suppose we should do something. Like, it's compared to especially what happened last week, it abundantly reeks of we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's just a little tough. Sawyer, like, mercifully breaks the situation up. He gets a gun. He shoots a temple other. Is that right? I mean,
apparently, that's what Aldo says off screen.
Yeah, I missed that. So he shoots a guy. Wow, Sawyer. And then he holds the gun at everybody and says, I'm getting out of here. I'm gone. So much like the Man in Black's real name is Special, is Sawyer's new alias Gone.
Ooh. So maybe he's really going back to Anthony Cooper. He's taking on a new name and everything.
I'm gone, baby. Gone.
Oh, no. Well, that's when Ben Affleck comes in. It's also noted here that I believe Dogen does speak English here. Speak English. He does tell Sawyer that he has to stay, which, again... We'll talk about this later when Dogen's like, I have to not speak English so that I keep myself separated from my people. But also, in front of a group of them, he is speaking English to Sawyer.
Yeah, so, like, the thing about it that I think is the biggest deal for me is that in doing this and in, like, speaking directly to the characters now... we are completely negating the need for Lennon to be on the show. Like, he no longer just doesn't have any reason to be on the show at all.
He has no job. Like, his job was to create this illusion of translation for Dogen, but now that they said, like, we don't need to do this anymore, right? It's the equivalent of in Across the Sea and in Solitary, where it was, we'll speak a foreign language for a little bit, then we'll switch to English because people are too lazy to read subtitles. Like, that's this version of the character, where it's like, all right, he plays a really important role. Now he's like Dogen's number two, but he's pretty much only going to hang around there to just provide, like, backup. There isn't really any specific storyline that I think separates him from Dogen. I would say more so Dogen gets more of an enriched character than Lennon, but it's not like Lennon does anything special that Dogen doesn't.
I mean, there's no doubt that Dogen, of the two characters, the one that actually has some story is Dogen. Lennon has none. And so, like, at least there's that. But, like, whether or not that's better or not, I don't know. But, like, Lennon's whole purpose is to be Dogen's translator. And so the second that that's out the window, he's just, like, another person on the scene, you know? And mm-hmm. I don't think you need it. I really, really, really don't. I think it's a waste of time when there's so many other characters to get to and probably so many other ways to convey a lot of the information that's being conveyed on the show. But we cannot rewrite history. So we just have to, whatever happened, indeed. What's done is done, to put it in Sawyer's parlance. Sawyer books it. He says, Saeed's not my friend. None of you are my friends. You all suck. You suck, you suck, you suck. You're cool. He looks at
Hurley.
And he says, I'm out. Miles, too, is cool. And Kate's like, you gotta stay. And Sawyer looks at Kate and is like, I am begging you, please do not follow me. I know you want to. I can see. I don't even think she says anything. And I think Sawyer literally verbatim says to Kate, like, Kate, listen to me. I know that you are so tempted to come and follow me, as you often are. Please do not do it this time. I'm begging you, do not follow me. whatever you do, whatever comes next, do not leave to come and track me. And then he leaves, and then Kate turns and looks at the camera and says, I'm going to follow him.
I'm Kate. And then, Kate Austin, yeah, I'm Kate, and I'm going to follow
Kate
him.
Austin, and I'm going to follow him. James Ford.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And so Kate is going to volunteer. She's like, I'm going to go track Sawyer. I'm going to make him come back and stay. She is, of course, going to be joined later on. This is where we get Aldo's first appearance. And so we talked about this, I believe, when he came up during the jailbreak, I think back in Not in Portland. But it's assumed, or maybe it's not in Portland. Maybe it's episode six instead. But I believe it's assumed that he was alive when, at the end of season three, when Ben tells, you know, Richard and everyone to go to the temple. He was part of this group with, like, Cindy. You know, he's a little bit of, like, I imagine, like, Billy Zane in Titanic trying to fit in with the women and children that are getting on the lifeboats instead of, like, fighting on the front lines like all the others. And so this is where he's been, just hanging out for the 3 years since then.
Oh, my God. Aldo.
Aldo is an A-hole. He's going to get fleshed out much more in the scene that we just played in the very beginning. But yeah, Aldo's going to literally blaze a path in here. Here's the other thing. You know, I criticized Alice and Janney about this in Across the Sea, but maybe it's because I enjoyed this episode maybe even less as a Lost episode than that. But I kind of love how Rob McElhenney just goes in there and, like, doesn't even try to pretend he's in Lost. It just feels like the way he's talking is completely Mac from It's Always Sunny. Like, there's even not even a pretense of him trying to pretend to be any other character.
Yeah, and this is another moment where I gotta say, I love Rob McElhenney. I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I adore that show. The gang, some of the worst characters, like, some of the worst people on TV, but some of the most hilarious characters. Like, I love Always Sunny. I think that show is incredible. I have yet to see season two of Mystic Quest, but I loved season one of Mystic Quest. I think I'm all about the Mac attack. You know, whether he's buff Mac, fat Mac, skinny Mac, any Mac. I love Mac. I hate Aldo. And I think that, like, bringing him back, I don't know why we did this. I don't know why we did this, especially, like, his whole vibe, his whole attitude, and, like, this guy is worthy of being one of the Temple Others. And the Temple Others are, like, some of them now, like, are being just, like, portrayed as, like, out-and-out would-be murderers. Like, they're going to shoot Jin in cold blood in the jungle. That he's just, like, this terrible, vindictive guy who's nursing this grudge from the time he got clocked in the face, and he's never let go. Like, this is, like, if you had a flashback episode for Aldo, every flashback scene would just be different angles of him getting butted in the face with the rifle. Like, it's just it, like, why are we doing this other than, like, let's, you know, like, it's the final season, he's a friend, let's bring him back, let's give him a cameo. Like, big mistake. I really don't like it. I think it really messes with the vibe quite a bit.
It's really odd. Again, I can understand the use of bringing back other Lost characters for fun little references, like, we're gonna get Kimi making eggs, which is one of the highlights of season six in my opinion, but this just sticks out like a sore thumb in all the worst possible ways. Like you said, I think it's more so of like a, hey, we like Rob McElhenney, he was supposed to be in Through the Looking Glass but couldn't do it because of booking, let's bring him in one more time. But like, this character literally elbows his way into the episode for no discernible reason and, like, becomes such an eye and an ear sore during the limited time he's on screen. Like, he really does suck up so much energy in this episode.
So anyway, Kate's like, I'm gonna follow him. And Jin's like, I will also follow. We were talking about this the other night when you and I were watching the episode together with the patrons of Posher Recaps. How many times have Kate and Jin been alone in a scene together? That's coming up later on in the episode. But, like, I am hard-pressed to think of when they are alone in a scene together outside of, like, do they have a moment alone? They do, right? Like, they have some time alone together in when Claire is giving birth to Aaron. Yeah. They're certainly involved in the scene together.
Yeah, during, I almost said Left Behind, but no.
Do no harm.
Yeah. Exactly. I imagine that because it's tough because Jin did not really know English for the first three seasons of the show.
It's a very infrequent pairing at the very least. Like,
yeah, Kate then disappears for 3 years and Jin's off doing his other stuff. I honestly don't think we've had any... This might be the first Kate-Jin one-on-one scene, at least since then, if not ever, in the history of the show. For some reason, with a voluminous ensemble cast that has been working together for going on 6 years, these are two actors that have not had a lot of screen time together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's why Jin goes after her. She's like, you know what? I really haven't ever talked to Kate in my life. I think I should probably do that.
I appreciate the two of them being together. And I do think that of everybody here... They are definitely the two that have the biggest reasons to currently leave and consider not coming back. You know, like, Kate wants to find Claire, Jin wants to find Sun. This is clear to me. This works. This makes sense, as much as things make sense right now. In the Sideways universe, Kate and her taxi cab shows up at this chop shop. And she, like, rolls up to this dude who is played by Jeff Kober, who genre TV fans may recognize as he was Joe the Claimer in season 4 of The Walking Dead, memorable arc. He is Jacob Hale Jr. in Sons of Anarchy. And those were two shows that during his time on both of those shows were very, very high on my visibility list. So this popped for me immediately seeing Joe the Claimer back in action. And she's like being really rude to him. She's like, here, you got to take off my handcuffs. She's got him at gunpoint. And he's like, listen, I could just like do this for free, like basically, or for $200, right? He says like $200.
She offers $200. Yeah.
He's like, stop pointing the gun at me. We could just get this done. Like, I feel like we've gotten off on the wrong foot. And I appreciate the character. Like, I think this is kind of like a fun character who's just like, why are you in handcuffs? And she's like, I'm wanted for murder. And she's like, you don't happen to have a place I can change? He's like, yeah, bathroom's over there. Don't forget to flush.
This is so freaking weird, but I think knowing what you know about The Flash Sideways, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because, like, if this is the world that Kate built, she's going to give herself some obstacles, but not too much. She's going to be like, yeah, I lived, like, this life where I was constantly running. Like, let me give me some people that will probably help me. Because, yeah, for some reason, the Kate storyline in this episode is depending on the kindness of strangers. Like, so many people are willing to help out this wanted murderer. Just saying, like, yeah, I'll take off your cuffs. Yeah, you can go change in my bathroom. Go ahead, do whatever you need to. This guy weirds me out to no end. And I was not surprised in the least that you said he is a veteran of The Walking Dead and the Sons of Anarchy. He has that look. But, Josh, a huge, huge, huge missed opportunity. Why was this character not played by the same actor who plays Ray Mullen?
Oh, wow. Okay, so just to anticipate the question, Dallin Servo had asked us, was it a lost opportunity to not make the mechanic Tom, Mr. Friendly? MC Gainey has a similar build to the actor they used. I think that would have worked really well as well. I had not considered the Peach Man Ray Mullen, who I know actually is in the pear business.
Could this be in this version, though? Yes. He has canned pears behind him.
Yes, in The Flash Sideways, let him be a Peach Man. Let him be what he always wanted to be. Yeah, I wish that this was the Peach Man. I think that's great. I love seeing Jeff Kober, like, great actor. This is like a fun character. But if this is Ray Mullen, I do think, like, this is one of those ways in which, like, the callbacks really would have worked.
Yeah, and I think MC Gainey would have been fun. He has his own relationship with Kate, and like Dallin points out, he does have that similar build to this rando character actor that they brought in for literally three lines. Apparently there was more to this scene that ended up being cut, but it still seems just completely out of nowhere for various reasons. But I think this is an opportunity where you parse in somebody who has had a monumental effect in Kate's life, and considering this is the last Kate flashback episode, the very first one, we see someone like Ray Mullen see how seedy Kate is and decide to help her out, even though he does end up, you know, ratting her out at the end. Like, I could see a very similar spot here as well. I think it'd be a really fun thematic connection to the very first time we saw Kate.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great pull. She goes to the bathroom. She sees a Polaroid picture of Claire, like, pointing at her belly, her fully pregnant belly, like a total badass.
I'm trying to remember, is Thomas in the picture in the sideways, or is Claire still like by herself?
I don't think so. I think she's by herself. Pretty sure.
So I don't know who's taking the picture there. I don't know
her
if that's friend. Carol.
She had
I don't
her
know
friend,
if that's
right. You know, maybe it's her friend.
Oh, right, that friend who suggested Richard Mullen, yep. Or Ray Mullen. No, Richard Mulkin.
Richard Mullen. Yeah, we're back. We're all the way back in season one.
All the way back. Yeah.
We went all the way back. We had to go back. So I guess just like seeing the picture is enough to make Kate feel bad enough that she's gonna go back around, but we got some other stuff to do first. We're back at the temple. This is Kate is gonna leave. Max being like, "Don't slow me down," and then I think Kate goes, "Don't slow me down." So already, like,
yeah, Kate's like super snippy with Aldo, which I think is very deserved. Aldo deserves all the everything that's coming to him in this episode, in my opinion.
A bit of a non sequitur, but I think mostly on point. Here's what I want for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I want in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I want Rob McElhenney to play a character that Hope Van Dyne gives a ton of shit to. I think let's revisit this in movie form for like a scene, and I bet it's great. Because they're both incredible, and I think it's just like, not now, damn it. Like, I think is sort of my feeling about it. Like, please, not right now. Kate tells Jack she's going to find James. I'll take care of him. You take care of Saeed. It's a deal.
If you can.
Special friend favor. And he is going to grab Kate by the arm and tell her to be careful. Wow. Look at this. So romantic. Yeah. So romantic. And then she is
It's a little bit of like a prologue, I would say, to like the big kiss that happens on the rocks in the end, right? Like, it very much had that energy to me, except in this circumstance, while Jack may have been soaked with blood and water in that instance, here he is like drenched with sweat.
Yeah.
I noticed that. I'm assuming that the temple is not very well ventilated. So I could see why he is sweating his absolute ass off over the course of this episode.
Yes. He is like, and he's never going to change out of these clothes for the rest of the show.
He's gonna be so stinky.
Like, of like the stinkiest characters on Lost by the end of the show, he's got to be really high on the list. Would be my guess. So she's going to go. Meanwhile, Saeed has been taken by Dogen, and Dogen, to his credit, is going to stop clutching his shirt for a minute, but just about a minute, long enough to torture the torturer. Let's listen in. Sound number one.
What is it you want? Please, whatever you're thinking of doing. What is that? Just tell me what you want. Why are you doing this? I don't have any secrets. Ask.
We're sorry we had to put you through that. It was a test. We had to be sure.
Test to be sure of what?
Don't worry. You passed. Just a
lied to him, didn't I?
Yes.
This scene sucks.
Tell me how you really feel.
Exactly. Put it a little more bluntly. God, this scene is so
stupid. To, you know, we're doing a lot of, like, calling back to season one, so, like, we're doing sort of, like, the let's torture the torturer again. But we
just did that in He's Are You.
Yeah, exactly, yes. And so, like, there's that. There's also, I think, like, the biggest issue, like, the instinct to, like, kind of, like, revisit some of the stuff from season one. Like, the more I think about it, like, the less angry about that I am. And, like, the more, like, I get that. Like, I think, like, let's close the loop. Let's bring it back around. So I don't mind that they want to, like, go here to some extent. But I think that the way in which they do it is ridiculous. And, like, clearly what Dogan is doing, like, what kind of sense does this make? He's like, you know, the electric chair, what's he trying? This is how he determines that he has some, like, malevolence growing inside of him. What's the tell? You know, like, what?
Yeah, well, I wonder if it started. I mean, I think the tell should be the ash, because I believe he's blowing ash on him at first. And that should probably be the tell, right? Because we know that Smokey doesn't like the ash. You imagine if he has some sort of adverse reaction to that. It's like, oh, okay, you got a little bit of Smokey growing inside of you. I mean, this is actually almost like a microcosm of what I dislike about the temple and Dogen's character in general is, again, this idea that Mother espouses all the way back in that first scene of Across the Sea of, like, why? Because just this idea of, like, never really providing any concrete answers, doing things without communicating anything to anybody, doing things with no sense of explanation. Like, Saeed begs him, like, I'll tell you what you need. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just tell me why you need me. But Dogen is going to somehow walk forward and try to convince everybody of, like, no, 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 Saeed must be gaslit this entire episode. He must be kept in the dark. If it doesn't happen, things might be dire, which, to be frank, is bullshit. And it is incredibly frustrating to me how this scene represents that fact that you have Saeed and the audience by proxy asking all these questions. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? What can I offer you? How can I help you? And Dogen is just completely giving him a straight face of, like, nope, you can't help me, but I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing.
I think that because I don't need the show to answer everything. And in fact, I think a lot of the stuff is better left unanswered. I think a lot of the stuff is better left, like, just to, like, the whims of, like, it's mysterious. Be cool with it. But I think, like, the mystery has to be compelling, and I think it has to be rendered compellingly. And,
exactly.
It's not that here. Like, this is, like, and now we're, like, setting up all sorts of, like, new systems that'll never get any kind of real clarification. And, like,
right.
I think that one of the things that's difficult, especially about it, because, like, the systems don't necessarily need clarification if I'm buying the characters, but I'm not buying the characters. The Temple Others are so sloppy. The Temple Others, like, profess to know so much, and yet they're, like, as, like, petty as Aldo. And so, like, there's just not enough to, like, kind of ground you in, like, having the faith that the characters know what they're doing. You know what I mean? And that, yep, that is, like, that's the barrier for me. I think, like, it is this combination of, like, a lack of trust in the character knowing what the character is doing, and then also, like, maybe, like, a bit of, like, it's just not that cool. You know, this isn't, like, yep, a cool thing. There's nothing cool about this. It's just, like, why is this happening? This is deeply unpleasant. If this is happening, then hopefully there's, like, some rationale behind it, but these characters are so hapless that I'm just struggling to figure out what that rationale could possibly be. So I think all of that mixes together to create a very, like, slovenly scene, and just, like, helps to contribute to the idea that, like, the Temple Others, as a group, I think, may be the weakest group of characters in all of Lost.
Right. And I think even from a thematic perspective, we talked about this a bit with Jacob, and I think, you know, Riley makes a great point about this in his perennial anti-Jacob essays, is this idea that I think you and I are both in agreement with, of if the idea is about this imperfect person in charge, give us more of that, right? Like, underline it for us. Explain it to us like we're five. And maybe that's what they're intending to do here as well, as, like, it's almost like the magician, you know, waving his hands and doing a bunch of tricks for no reason in particular. That's all well and good, but I would like to see more deliberate nature And that, I guess Jack sort of does that later on in the episode. But honestly, all it comes across here is, you know, putting Saeed on the table and going like, whoopity whoopity woo! Oh, that was the test you passed. Like, it's just such a bad, sloppy scene. Especially, again, I'll compare it to He's Are You. If we're talking Saeed gets tortured under mysterious circumstances, the truth serum is the polar opposite of what happens here. Where, yes, maybe there are some questionable, wobbly circumstances behind it that don't necessarily need explanation, but that has character root and really compelling performances as opposed to what happens here.
Yeah, totally agreed. Not much more to add to it other than, like, yeah, I just really don't like it and I really don't think it works. Like, I appreciate, like, let's try stuff, but, like, I think, I don't know, there's got to be existing characters on the board at this point. Like, maybe this is, like, I don't know, like, can we get Richard Alpert back? Like, I was
thinking him, or maybe even, I mean, listen, I maybe even bring somebody in like a Cindy. Right?
I was
or
just
like,
thinking Cindy is a great idea of, like, especially because, like, if the answer is character and, like, what has happened to Cindy, boost Cindy's profile, elevate her, right? Like, elevate her in importance, I think is a really good call, Mike.
Yeah, I think it's the same,
like,
thing we were talking about with
in
Miss
the 3 years since she's been here. Like, that's a pretty fun story to tell.
Yeah, and I think it's also a little bit of a reflection of what we were talking about with Miss Clue in season 3, right? This idea of why feel the need to create all these other characters, right? Like, I guess that was due to scheduling, but, like, why have to create Colleen to get killed by Sun or Isabel the Sheriff in Stranger in a Strange Land when you have this other character that you can bring in and build upon who you introduced in season 2? There is this person standing here who we have this connection with going back to season 2. It's been a while since we've seen her, but what fun would it be to build on how much she's become maybe perverted by the whims of Jacob and the temple others, rather than introducing us to two characters and then having to, like, really play catch up with the two of them of, like, okay, now you really got to care about them because they're going to die 3 episodes from now.
Yeah. I think that this is a really good call. I think Cindy being in there is great. Gives you an opportunity maybe to, like, make characters out of the kids, though, of course, that's dangerous. but I think as a general idea, I really like it. It's a character who we already have familiarity with. Obviously, she's available because she's here on the show. I love it. I think it's great. Really, really good call. That helps with the temple for sure, I think. And also, like, maybe the idea that, like, our leader is gone, we're a little bit rudderless, like, could have been interesting. Yeah. I think that there's something to play with there. All right, let's go back to the sideways and actually to sound number 2. We are going to really begin, like, the Kate and Claire stuff. Let's listen in.
Where were you going?
What?
Before I got in the cab, where were you going?
Why, so you can hijack them too?
I was waiting for a bus. I came to bring you a steak.
Relax, I didn't take your money.
Well, gee, thanks. So where were you going?
Don't worry about it.
Bye.
Langdon Street, Brentwood.
You got family there?
No. It's a couple who's adopting my baby. They're meant to meet me at the airport, but I guess they got their days mixed up or something.
It's not like they abandoned me.
Brentwood's not far. Get in. Seriously?
Do you want a ride or not?
And so they go up to Langdon Street, which is located within a medieval painting that has a secret eye in the corner that's staring at the corner of the museum, which contains a secret codex that must be unlocked with the numbers.
Yeah, the Valenzetti code. Kate, how did you find Claire?
Who the hell knows? I mean, I guess is
how
this
did you, like, were you just driving around in the cab and then, like, Kate? She's in Claire is in eye shot of LA SpaceX, and Kate goes back. She risks it, and there isn't, like, a police barricade or anything. Like, she's just able to, like, really get away here pretty clean. That's wild.
And also, Kate, why do you not ditch the taxi? Because I would imagine your name's being called in multiple times, one of them being, hey, be on the lookout for this cab that has this license plate. Hell, Arst even yells that at her as she's driving away with his luggage. You'd imagine if they're tagging the car and you just came from literally an auto body shop, go up to this really cool dude and be like, hey, can I borrow one of your cars and drive away with that? Like, what type of criminal are you at this point?
Yeah, but also, like, it should be, like, if not for the fact that there's a lot of LVP points to give out, to double up on some people, I think, a demerit to Law and Order, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But I wonder, again, does this go back to, with the exception of maybe Sawyer and Miles, Kate, like, built this world where Law and Order kind of sucks? And so it's like, yeah, the cops are a little sloppy, so I could go run around and do what I want without much repercussion.
Yeah, and look, it's sideways. This is like, this is the next stage of life and all of that stuff. And so, like, should logic be a little bit thrown out the window, you know, to a certain extent, I think, for sure. But like, it just still plays really wonky to me. I don't know. And I think, like, I think I'm not pulling on this thread in a better episode. In a better episode, I really don't care. In this episode, which is already, like, I think really, like, clumsy, I do care. It stands out to me.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of with regards to the how did she find Claire question is, if Claire did not walk far from where Kate forced her out of the cab, I could see, I mean, Claire is pregnant, so I would imagine she would not want to walk far. I'm also not sure what Claire's...
How much time passes, though, right? Like, this is like an hour, 2 hours later, right?
Well, I'm not sure what Claire's plan is, too. Like, was she going to get another taxi to take her to Langdon Street? Was she just going to sit there and mope for a little bit and be like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen now? I mean, what we can also, I think, chalk a lot of this up to is they just have a feeling, right? Like, I think a lot of the reasons why Kate's going to eventually come up and pick up Claire, because we sort of yada yada through this. She goes through Claire's bag, which Kate refused to give her, and she sees the Polaroid, sees the Orca, etc. And it's not exactly a flash where she wakes up, but I think this whole episode, the storyline between Kate and Claire, is really this idea of deja vu, of like,
all over again,
something feels important about you that I should come back and stay with you, so that even though Kate is on the run, she feels the need to go back and take Claire with her. I don't know if it speaks to anything from, like, sideways Kate's thematic perspective, or more so this is this idea of, like, I just feel like I have to stay close by you for whatever reason. Yeah,
I buy all of that. We go back to the island time, and it's the scene we listen to at the top of this, just Aldo being terrible, and poor Justin. I want to give a shout out to Justin. I think Justin's a good dude.
Justin's like a good guy. Yeah. He's a solid dude. I think he's super logical. Like, he's basically speaking up. Aldo's trying to be the angry version of what the Temple Others are, right? Like, secretive and huffy. Of, oh, that's on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know. And Justin's like, I think we could tell him about the Ajira flight.
Or Justin, like, has just been, like, buddied up with the worst guy. And, like, Justin's, like, constantly trying to be, like, relatively on the level. Also, when he and Jin are going to get captured by Claire, like, Justin's going to be like, this lady's going to kill us. We got to get out of here now. And he's right. He gets killed.
Yeah.
Poor Justin.
Yeah, brutally. I believe he gets, like, hatcheted by Claire.
Yeah, he gets axed in the heart.
Yeah, so poor Justin. He's not
like
going to get
Justin.
These.
Justin's great. Room for an MVP point for Justin this week from me. But otherwise, I think Justin's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's also right. He's
Justin's
the one who sticks
the best
up for
Temple
Kate.
Other than Cindy,
I think Justin should be in charge personally. Yeah. Justin seems to be like a fair leader here.
Yes,
justice for Justin.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. So anyway, yeah, they're going to get into the whole, you don't even remember me, do you? And I would. What if the whole gang was here? What if the Temple Others was just the gang from
no,
Always Sunny?
Okay, you know what?
Danny DeVito as Dogan.
Yes, no, that's the thing. I would love Dogan.
Charlie as
50
Lennon.
Times more if Danny DeVito played Dogan, and if he would, like, instead of grinding up pills, he offered Saeed an egg to eat instead that contained the poison.
I think recasting some of the final season characters as the gang is pretty good. Danny DeVito is Dogan, Charlie is Lennon. I think
can Caitlin Olsen be Zoe?
I was gonna say Caitlin Olsen would be I guess Zoe would work. I think Zoe would work. Dennis has probably gotta be the Man in Black.
Bring in Glenn Howerton. Or maybe Glenn Howerton can be another Widmore dude. Or maybe recast Bram as Glenn Howerton. Uh-huh.
There's got to be someone better. I think he would think that he's Jacob. I mean, he could be Jacob. He's sort of, you know, he could play, like, he would, if Riley's concern is they don't lean into Jacob being a dick nearly enough, Glenn Howerton would fix that instantly.
Yeah. We've got the Jacob method. Yeah. You know, just tell them to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone could develop the Jacob method based on the Dennis system, I would really love to hear it. Anyway, rocks come falling, Kate escapes, Jin escapes, Aldo and Justin are left in the dust. So Syed comes back from being tortured at the temple. He said they didn't even ask any questions. Jack wants to go and speak to Dogen, and he just like sidesteps past these two guards like a boss. Jack is a boss in this scene. We get Jack hanging out with Dogen and Lennon. Let's listen in. Sound three.
Hey, Shepard. We were hoping you'd come on your own.
What the hell did you do to Syed?
We didn't do anything to him. Your friend is sick.
Sick with what?
There's not really a literal translation. The closest thing would be infected.
Infected? He's not even running a fever. Did I say something funny?
I doubt it. He didn't really have a sense of humor. He says you have to give your friend this pill.
Are you serious?
Why don't you give it to him?
Because it won't work unless he takes it willingly, and he won't take it willingly from us.
Well, then maybe you should have asked him to take it before you tortured him.
We didn't torture him. We were diagnosing him.
To see if he was infected.
Yes.
I'm not going to give anything to Saeed unless I know what's in it.
Tell me, Shepard. Your friend. How did he get shot?
He was helping me.
So, it was your fault?
Yes.
And there have been others who were hurt or died helping you?
Yes.
Well, then this is your chance to redeem yourself. It's medicine, and your friend needs it.
What happens if I don't give it to him?
The infection will spread.
Sorry, Mike.
Listening to these scenes just like pain me.
I know. I
for
get it.
Whatever reason, because no, it's just like it's very frustrating. Like I hate. I think Jack is so cathartic in this scene, right? Being like, okay, why is this medicine? I'm a doctor, and you're trying to tell me that this is medicine without giving me any sort of diagnosis or explanation as to what's happening. You know, this is like trying to sell ice to, you know, someone who lives up north, right? Like the Portuguese version of me. And then Dogen decides to finally speak English, but he like does it in the most drippingly malevolent, you know, manipulative way, right? Being like, oh, it's your fault Saeed got shot and all those people died on your watch. So therefore, this will be the first way that you'll be able to actually fix someone for once in your life. It's just like, God, it's so freaking grody. And I know that's what the character is supposed to be, but it doesn't make me enjoy it any better.
Yeah, I mean, so one way that like I can live with this, like the way that like I'm able to like obviously like first and foremost, like I wish none of it happened. But that's not, you know, that's an immutable thing. It happened. But like, are there ways to like, if I'm not, I'm not going to be able to, like, make sense of what the hell they're doing here in the temple, personally, or at least, like, make much, like, reasonable sense. But is there, like, is there something thematic here? And I think to this point of, like, does the show go get complicated enough that, like, Jacob's way is not necessarily the right way? I think, like, you see it in the legacy of the people who follow him the most closely, right? Like, mm-hmm. these are people who would consider themselves agents of Jacob. They're in, like, overdrive hearing that Jacob is dead. They're panicked. They're chickens without their heads. Damn. And I feel like this, like, whole, like, a lot of people died in your watch, right? Well, this is your shot to redeem yourself, he's saying, as he's lying, and this is a guy on Jacob's side. Like, I do think is, and if Jack is to do it, does Saeed die? I mean, like, it's poison, right? Feel like this is a very significant lie that Dogen is feeding to Jack, and I think a great argument in favor of the show's, I think, apparent argument of, like, blind faith is not great. Blind, unthinking, unflinching, unquestioning, devoted faith is dangerous. And you could get your friend killed. If there is something to pull from this thematically that works for me, it's that. The scene still sucks.
I agree that I think what is really interesting about the Jack arc in this episode overall is this sort of reckoning, right? Because remember, LA Space X, Jack is still left in the wake of the incident where he was never more right about something in his entire life, and he was actually wrong from his perspective. And so now he's really reeling of, okay, I tried to be the man of faith, but, you know, can I really be? And I think the lesson, at least what I'm projecting, the lesson that Jack takes away from the experience in this episode is, while you can still believe more than you used to, you could still apply a healthy amount of scrutiny to things, right? And I think that's one of the reasons why Jack is ultimately not going to give Saeed the pill, is because I think there is still a voice in the back of Jack's head, that man of science thing, that is like, this is sketchy AF. They haven't told us anything. I know that I meant to just throw that away and believe in what the island is telling me, but at the same time, I can't look past who I am as a person, and who I am as a person would not prescribe Saeed a pill that I don't know the contents of. And so I do like that from Jack's perspective, that, like you said, the ultimate resolution on the show with the man of science, man of faith, is, of course, the answer is somewhere in between. And I think that's a lesson that Jack learns here. And so I think this is actually an underrated Jack episode. Like, I think has some really sound logic in this episode. And I think, unfortunately, it comes at the expense of really portraying the other side as just, like, completely morally and ethically bankrupt.
Well, also, like, just, like, ineffectual and hapless and just, like, not good at what they do.
The idea of, like, well, it's a means to an end, so we're going to trick Jack into giving Saeed the pill rather than giving him any sort of information about what might be going on, unless we're absolutely forced to.
Or also, like, I don't know, if you're so concerned, why don't you just force feed the thing?
No, it has to be you.
It has to be you. It has to be you. So on the other side of this, Miles and Hurley are with Saeed asking him ghost questions, which is great.
I love Naveen Andrews' delivery of, I am not a zombie.
I'm not a zombie. Which is, I think, a nice little nod at the joke that Darlton used to make on their podcast, Damon and Carlton, about, like, they're going to do the zombie season someday. So he is not a zombie. I think it's, like, a good in-joke. Jack needs a minute with Saeed. Hurley and Miles say they'll be in the food court if you need us. The temple others would be instantly cooler if they had a food court. I did earlier today, Mike. I watched a video that was, like, a behind the scenes of filming in the temple of Jack and Hurley, aka Matthew Fox and Jorge Garcia, having a very, like, up close and personal conversation about a craft services sandwich that was bologna, cheese, and mayo on white bread, and them both talking about how nostalgic it made them.
What about the dipping sauces?
No dipping sauce. I think it may have just been the mayo spread on the sandwich.
Wow. So yeah, maybe the food court. I was hoping for at least, like, an Orange Julius or something. You know, maybe. Do you think Hurley? I know the temple gets destroyed here, but do you think when Hurley rebuilds the island in the new man in charge, is he going to put a Mr. Klux on the island?
Yeah, and I think that he should also take all of the temple others and send them to various Mr. Klux franchises around the planet.
Yes, pull a Randy Nation.
Get them out of here. get them out of here, put them, but don't, like, you know, like re-employ them elsewhere. They all deserve jobs. I just think this is not the right spot for them. This is where Jack's going to say, like, I've got this pill. They want you to take it. They say it's medicine, but I don't know. And when you thanked me for saving your life, I need you to know I didn't do anything. They fixed you, not me.
I don't know, Jack. It's headcanon officially now on DTH that you have super CPR, and so technically you were the one that did it, not them.
Love this line from Saeed when he says, I don't care who fixed me. I only care about who I trust. In a better episode, this is like such an important moment, I think, that Jack's whole thing has always been about, like, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to fix you. I'm going to fix it. And this person who is close to him, this person who he cares about, is going to tell him, like, that doesn't matter. I don't give a shit about who fixed stuff. I care about who I trust. I care about who I've built that up with. And I think, like, it is this, this like, sort of like, I don't know about this permission slip or something, but I think it is like, it is like this moment where he, Jack has this opportunity to, like, start, like, trusting himself again a little bit more. Like, if Saeed trusts me, maybe I should, like, it's this thing, like, when you're feeling, like, really horrible about yourself or horrible about a thing, and you just cannot get out of your own head on it. But, like, somebody who you really respect and somebody who you really trust comes to you and says, like, you, if you trust me, like, you should trust that I believe that your thing or what you're doing or what you're all about is great. And it's like, who am I to disbelieve this person who I trust a lot? So I think, like, this line from Saeed doesn't fix Jack, but it's not about that. I think it starts the process of Jack being able to, like, trust circumstances, trust himself a little bit more, trust his own judgment, trust the people around him, like, rebuild that to a certain degree. I think that that's all pretty good.
Well, yeah, because Jack's going to say that in his next scene, right? You know, Dogan's going to ask him, say, you have to trust me. And Jack says, I don't trust myself. How am I supposed to trust you? And I think that's also the general attitude that he has. And it's interesting. It's almost paradoxical in that way that he believes this. But at the same time, I absolutely agree. I think this is the statement that causes Jack to not give Saeed the pill, for him to say, yeah, you know what? I think my predilection to provide a panacea and, as Dogan says, to, like, finally fix someone for once is overwhelmed by the fact that these are people that I should be trusting in, and I should listen to my gut, I think, over my head at this point, and, like, my heart. And I think that Jack is going to be a little gut driven for the rest of this season, and that is sort of a nice push in the right direction. And I think it's also pertinent given that Saeed is an incredibly rational character, and he has yet to become, quote unquote, fully infected. So I think this is, you know, one of the last salient pieces of advice he's going to be giving someone, and it makes sense that it's 100% true.
Back out in the jungle, Kate and Jin, this is like their scene together, and I really am struggling to think of, like, another time that they really have a moment like this.
Yeah, they're really the Elaine and George of Lost.
Yeah, like, you want to find Sun? Of course I do. What are you doing? What are you going to do when you find Sawyer? We'll figure it out together. It's very quick. They really, like, they're like, this is too awkward to be in the same scene together for too long. Let's try and get through this fast.
Exactly. Like, all right, this is, like, a small acknowledgement. It's sad that Kate doesn't really acknowledge, like, hey, I care about Sun too. Because, again, remember, they were BFFs back in, like, seasons 1 and 2. But at this point, they, like, firmly understand each other. We each have people that we want to go after. That's why it's okay to not go back to the temple.
Yes. So in the sideways, Kate and Claire are going to roll up to the address of the people who were going to adopt Claire's child. And it goes a certain way. Let's listen in. Sound 4.
This is it. Will you come in with me?
Are you kidding me?
Please, I really don't want to go up there on my own.
Hi, Mrs. Bascom. I'm Claire Littleton.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. My husband... he left me. And believe me, I wanted a baby so much. But I can't do it alone. I'm sorry. Look, I know I should have called you.
So you just changed your mind?
Look, my life is just a little bit complicated
right now. You came all the way from Australia and you don't call?
Oh, my God.
Are you okay?
I believe there's actually a cut line from this scene where Kate says, she came all the way from Australia and you don't call. And then Charlie pops his head in frame and says, you don't write?
You don't write?
And they're like, oh, I haven't met you yet. I won't meet you until the finale. So please pipe down.
This scene is so wild. Like this woman has gone through a trauma. This woman has gone through something awful. She's like, she opens the door. She is, unless she's a sociopath who saw who was coming up, she's like, shit. Okay. Gotta get into cry mode. Gotta sell a story.
Shit, right, gotta, you know, listen, I know I didn't want that baby. Let me just pretend that my husband left me.
You know, like, unless she's like a total psycho, she has been through something awful here. And then let's even think about how this is all like a manifestation of an afterlife or whatever. Like, so like either like this is what this poor woman is still holding on to in the afterlife, or if they are like, you know, if these are all like sort of like characters on a stage for the Oceanic people, like our characters, then like this is who like Kate and Claire are mutually creating to like then like make themselves like feel more justified in the righteous anger about like Claire coming all the way here. And Kate just kidnapped Claire. And she's like, you rude lady, you didn't even call her that this was going on. You just held this woman at gunpoint. You don't get to vote here. This is between Claire and Lindsay is the name of the woman, right?
Yeah, or I don't know, Carol Baskin or whatever her name is. I do believe, actually, I think it's Lindsay, which actually is an anagram. Lindsay Bascom is an anagram for used by Malkins.
Really? Interesting.
Yes, that is incredible. But yeah, it's very clear.
Claire's aunt is Aunt Lindsay, too.
Yeah, so I think it's obviously clear that this is like Claire's sort of input, right, into the shared universe of like, let me create this woman who's going through a very similar circumstance as me and like wanting to give up the baby. I think this is also going to hammer home her decision to eventually keep Aaron. But yeah, it's an odd like rush of given circumstances, I would say, of the coincidence of like, oh, okay, this is the exact, like nearly the exact same circumstances of what happens to Claire. I would say, I talked about this when we were watching it in the Discord, this is like an incredible Curb Your Enthusiasm scene, specifically Kate taking the perspective of Larry David, right? Like, you could like call, you know, it's not easy. You can't just pick up a phone, stifle your tears for a second and say that you can go back on the airplane. I don't understand why you're doing this. Yeah. Just completely coming in from this perspective of, The lady just had her husband leave her. Her life is in tatters. Sorry she didn't give a courtesy call to Claire Littleton to be like, sorry, can we reschedule? I've had a really, really, really rough day. And Kate's coming in like, oh, well, you could have called. I think you could have called.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so she needs to go to the hospital. We will check in on her at the hospital very, very soon. First, we go to the barracks. Kate has tracked Sawyer to the barracks. We didn't really touch on this too much, but it's amazing that when Kate's like, I'll track him, I'll find him. The Temple Others are so bad that they don't have a tracker, that they have
to the point where they have to send stupid Aldo. Yeah. And maybe Justin was the tracker.
Yeah.
And he ends, because he's the one who's like, oh, I think she's right. Like, maybe Justin is just too courteous to really speak up about it. But yeah, this is back in season one Kate skills, right? She tracks Sawyer all the way to desiccated Dharmaville. She finds Sawyer in his old house, prying up his floorboards. He has this like black bag that you would use to hold D&D dice. And Kate gives herself away, though. A floorboard creaks. He holds this gun and she's like, oh, I was worried about you. And he just gives no response and storms past her.
It's incredible. So she's now at the barracks. She sees Sawyer. Sawyer's ripping up the floorboards. There's a shoebox. She makes a noise. He pulls a gun on her. She says, I was worried about you. We will get to the two of them momentarily. We can put a pin in it for now. Claire and Kate roll up to the hospital. Apparently, this is 3 minutes since the last scene, which is impressive.
Wow, Kate made good time, especially considering it is a stolen taxi that has probably been called into the police if she was assumingly speeding to the hospital.
It's amazing.
Let's just add that to the list of crimes and misdemeanors she's committed this day.
It's amazing. So they go in, they check in, and the doctor on call is this guy. Let's listen, sound five.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Are you a doctor?
Yes, I'm Dr. Goodspeed.
Can I please get your help in here?
Miss Littleton? Claire, how are you feeling?
Uncomfortable. What's happening?
What's happening is that Mother Nature has gotten a little ahead of herself. Are you ready to have your baby?
I'm sorry, what?
You're at 36 weeks, 3 centimeters dilated and about 80% effaced, which means if you want, you can have your baby tonight.
If I want? So what, you mean you can stop it then?
Maybe. However, to do that would require a number of drugs.
Drugs? I mean, will that hurt the baby?
No, they're perfectly safe. I just don't want to have to stick you with needles if I don't have to. So it's up to you.
I'm not ready.
Okay. Let's get her started on the nifedipine drip.
What is it?
Margaret, let's do an ultrasound. I want to get a picture of what's going on in there. It could just mean the baby's out of position.
What are you saying? What's happening to my baby? Is my baby okay? Is Aaron okay?
See? There he is. Everything is just fine. Your boy just likes to move around. 140 BPM. Perfectly normal. I have a feeling that Aaron is going to be a handful. Now let's see if we can slow this down. You did great, Mommy. Thanks.
Josh, I cannot tell you the literal drop that occurs in my stomach every single time I hear poor William Mapother have to say, "You did good, Mommy."
You did good, Mommy.
Yeah. Don't say that! Like, through the Garrett said, I've had a very limited viewing experience of, you know, very many OBGYNs, but, like, they always call the mom. Nobody's saying, okay, Mommy, come on in. Who says that? I guess Ethan. Like, Ethan's still a weirdo even in this universe?
He's just, like, he's so terrible at this. Like, he's so terrible about being nice.
He's like, oh, okay, don't worry, Mommy. It's like, oh, God, I used to like you until now. I love the irony of this scene, though I also do question the logic of Kate just walking up to a random doctor. Like, this is not Walmart. You can't walk up to a doctor in a hospital and be like, excuse me, can you help me with something? Can you ring me up? I've got a pregnant lady over here that needs checking up on. There are procedures for these things, but maybe that's another, you know, deja vu feeling of like, I have a feeling I'm supposed to talk to this guy. But I love the irony, right, of I don't want to stick you with needles if I don't have to. The care that Ethan is showing for Claire. And maybe the idea of also, like, Mother Nature getting a little ahead of itself, right? Like, again, if the idea is Mother Nature has everyone wake up around the same time in the end, this idea of maybe rushing things a bit too quickly is speaking towards how that resolves as well. But, yeah, I think it's a really fun scene that utilizes a previous character. Maybe has a little bit of an unintentional creepy tinge at the end with the use of the word mommy.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so odd.
It's so odd.
Is it a Freudian slip?
You did great, Mommy.
Does he mean to call her Claire, but then he says mommy, and does he kick himself all day being like, I can't believe I called my patient mommy. That was so awkward.
And then he calls his mom, Amy Good, to be like, oh, I called it, mommy, I called it, you, I called a patient after you. It was really weird. Yeah, I'll wear the sailor suit tonight. Don't you worry. And then it turns out to be what, like a Norma Bates situation where Amy Goodspeed is just a skeleton residing in a rocking chair in a hotel somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I would watch that.
Bates Motel.
Yeah, they got the wrong other to be on Bates Motel because Nestor Carbonell shows up there.
True. Yeah. So it's a fun way to see him, though. Spoiler alert, I'm going to give Ethan an MVP point because I think he does do a good job of talking Claire down here and doing his job. But he does not do himself any favors by calling her mommy.
It's so weird. It's so, so, so weird. But I guess, you know, nice to see him back. It is a little odd that, like, in this world where, like, some of the bad guys are just, like, worse or at least still bad, that Ethan gets a little bit of a pass. I don't really know why. But okay, here he is.
I don't know. Was this Juliet, like, when they're doing this committee meeting to decide the Flash sideways? Juliet's like, you know, I got to see a side of Ethan. Yeah, he was a little off, but, like, he wasn't that bad. And so Claire, like, got bullied into, like, all right, fine, I guess I'll make him the doctor. But under one condition, we still have to make him, like, a little bit of a freak.
Yeah.
All right, fine. We'll have him call you mommy.
Call you
That's
mommy.
My compromise.
All right, so we've bagged on this episode a bit, and, like, this next scene, I think, prevents the episode for me from being, like, a total wash and being, like, maybe, like, my least favorite episode of Lost. And it's just a really, really, really great scene. I think Holloway is rightfully going to get, like, the lion's share of the credit, but I think Evangeline Lilly's reactions to everything that Josh Holloway is doing, really, really superb. This is the scene of Kate and Sawyer on the pier. Let's listen in. Sound six.
A couple days ago, you asked me why I came back to the island. I need to find Claire. I thought maybe if I could catch up to you, you could help me. And then maybe if we could find her and bring her back to Aaron, then maybe all of this wouldn't have been for nothing. I'm sorry. I never should have followed you.
Which time?
That was your house, right? With Juliet?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You already said that.
No. For Juliet. If I hadn't come after you on the sub, then you two would have left, and she would have never died.
It's not your fault she's dead. It's mine. She was sitting right there, right where you are now, trying to leave this place. And I convinced her to stay. I made her stay on this island because I didn't want to be alone. You understand that, right? But I think some of us are meant to be alone. Ask her to marry me.
Nightfall. Well, Josh, it's a beautiful scene, but I don't know if you know this. There's actually an alternate ending to this scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Sawyer's about to toss the ring into the ocean, and actually the late Bill Paxton comes out and is like, what are you doing? Don't do that. And then Sawyer actually is somehow able to convince Bill Paxton to drop it into the ocean alongside him. And it didn't work with test audiences. People are still a little out on this original ending as well, but at least it's better than the alternative.
I thought you were going to say the alternate scene is Kate saying, Sawyer, throw the ring into the lake! And then Sawyer turns around and says, no.
No.
And then he puts it on and he disappears.
Ooh, I would love that if we just involve some more mystic mumbo jumbo in it too. Of now Sawyer can be invisible and now like you see John Loki, right? Be like, he's like a ring wraith. He's like, I know where it is now.
That'd be terrifying. What a beautiful scene. And so sad. So sad to get like, because there are three people in this scene. You know, it's Sawyer, it's Kate, and Juliet is here in music form. Her theme is roaring through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, I remember, you know, going through this when we went to Stranger in a Strange Land, and like that episode cannot be a total wash because it's got Oceans Apart and it's beautiful. It's just like majestic, majestic music. And here it is in this really beautifully, beautifully timed moment, hearing Juliet's theme as Sawyer is just like in this horrible, lonely place of like some people are just meant to be alone. Like the absolute, like, the absolute tragedy of all of that. It's just too much to bear. Kate crying and Evangeline Lilly once again proving best crying actor on Lost. And I think like there's the world where like, is she crying because she knows that she'll never get Sawyer back? She's still just hung up on the Sawyer thing.
No.
That's not how I view it.
This is a platonic skate scene, in my opinion. I still do believe that despite the stoking they did in the incident, that in whatever happened, that buried the hatchet in Justin's chest that was the skate stuff. That I think both Sawyer and Kate were like, all right, we've got our other things that we're doing right now. We're totally fine. I think this is Kate legitimately wanting to connect with Sawyer as a friend.
Yeah.
I think this is like, you are someone who understands me. I'm someone who understands you. I see you're in a lot of pain right now. Let me try to help. And God, is this devastating from Josh Holloway, because you get a little bit of introspection into Sawyer. This, and like you're talking about, this reversion back to this season one form of not only the snippiness, but also a bit of that self-destructiveness as well. What Sawyer essentially says is like, I didn't deserve happiness. I thought I did with Juliet, but it turns out I'm just the same bad person that I always was, that deserved to be tortured beforehand, that deserved to be, you know, hated amongst everybody. What, who did I kid myself, giving myself false hope that I could actually end up happily ever after? Yeah. And it's so incredibly sad. I mean, it's also a little bit of like, it's warped logic, right? Him backfilling that he made Juliet stay on the island because he didn't want to be alone. I mean, we saw LaFleur. I don't think that was necessarily the case. I don't think Sawyer's like, hey, Juliet specifically, I want you to stay. He's got a whole crew there. But I can understand why Sawyer is in the state that he is, and like, we both know firsthand, Josh, like when your mind is in a turbulent place, you lump yourself with a lot of blame, no matter how little sense it makes. I think it is an incredibly strong and tragic scene for Sawyer. I think it's a really great check-in with these two as well, which we really haven't had since whatever happened. I like that this is a way for Sawyer to be able to finally like parse out his grief, even if that grief is now bouncing back onto him.
Yeah. I also feel like there is something with Kate going on here where it's like when she's crying at the end of the scene, there is like this vibe of like she came back here with purpose. She came back here to find Claire. She came back here to reunite Aaron with her, with his birth mother. And there are, you know, I think she must have known it would be a difficult job. There was going to be a lot of hard stuff that happens along the way. But I think that she's got to feel some measure of, as she says at the start of the scene, like, this was my fault. And even if Sawyer says it's my fault, that's not automatically going to stop Kate from feeling like I contributed to this.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this is the toll right? Like, a human life was lost in the pursuit of this thing. If I wasn't here, she'd be alive. It might be part of, like, what she's thinking. So I think all of that is swirling together in this scene. I think it's one of the really, really great Josh Holloway scenes of the season. You know, there's, yep, there's still some really good Sawyer stuff coming, but the best Sawyer stuff has happened, I think, on the show. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, like, there's definitely a really cool arc for Sawyer in season six. If you look for it, it's not necessarily like super, super strong by any stretch of the imagination, but it's kind of a little bit of Sawyer getting his groove back and really just sort of like muscling up through his time undercover in like multiple regards and trying to push forward and get people off the island. Like, he kind of is able to like rededicate himself, and all of that is great. But it just doesn't have quite the same power of season five specifically, and a mm-hmm. good chunk of season four as well. And I really love getting this moment of like extraordinary vulnerability from him here. I think it's just a spectacular, spectacular scene.
And also speaks to his character advancement too, that I do not think the Sawyer of the first few seasons would actually come out and say this. Like, when the Sawyer name reveal happens in Confidence Man, Kate has to pull that out of him. She literally has to read the letter. I think Sawyer admitting here the fact that he didn't want to be alone and that he feels like he deserves to be alone, I think that's a big step for the character as well, as much as we might think it might be a bit of a regression overall.
Yeah. Let's go into a scene that is not as good. Jack and Dogan in the temple. It's Pillgate, sound number 7.
What's that?
It's a baseball.
Speak pretty good English for someone who needs a translator.
We both know that I don't need a translator.
And then why do you have one?
Because I have to remain separate from the people I'm in charge of. It makes it easier when they don't like the decisions I make for them.
Who are you?
My name is Dogan.
Are you from here? The island?
I was brought here like everyone else.
What do you mean, brought here?
You know exactly what I mean. You didn't give your friend the pill, did you?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't know what's in it.
It will eliminate
the infection. Yeah, I got that. But what's in it?
I cannot explain.
Try.
There isn't any time. He'll die.
He already died.
What is in it?
You just have to trust me.
I don't trust myself. How am I supposed to trust you? Let's see where trust gets us.
Now, are you going to tell me what's in it?
Poison.
No, look at Jack here. Look at the big balls on Jack swallowing a poison pill to see if Dogan calls his bluff.
This was another bit of feedback from Dallin Servo, who had said, what if the darkness in Saeed is similar to a Horcrux, and that the poison pill wouldn't necessarily kill Saeed, but it would kill the Horcrux? The pill would kill Jack because there's no darkness in him, so that's why Dogan forces it out of him. Could the pill just be killing the poison in Saeed and not Saeed himself? So just like, let's just like talk through, like, now that we know that it's poison, like that piece of it. Is that an explanation that sits with you?
That seems way too selective, in my opinion. And I guess, you know, if you're invoking another magical franchise, that might be the case. But to be like, oh, this will only kill the parasite in you, but not you, but it's also poison enough to kill just a regular person, I don't know. It doesn't seem like enough of an explanation to me. But it's better than the explanation that Dogen provides, which is literally none. You know, with him literally just saying, you're just going to have to trust me. That's not Jack Shepard. Dogen has a fundamental misunderstanding of who Jack Shepard is a person over the course of this episode. Despite Lennon wanting to refer to him on a last name basis, they really don't know anything about this guy.
Yeah. My goodness. I feel like just kill the guy. Just feed him the poison. Why are we going through the rigmarole of Jack having to be the guy? It's so annoying. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I love headcanoning stuff. This is really hard to headcanon. Even Down's explanation is decent, like pretty good. When he says it's poison, and he is effectively saying, when he's asked, like, why would you want to kill Saeed? He's not going to say we don't want to kill Saeed. It's not what he's going to say, you know? So he does want to kill Saeed then, take him at face value. Just kill the guy. Why have to have it be Jack? Why does it have to come from somebody he trusts? Why all of this? Just gesturing at all of this. It's so frustrating. It speaks to all the things that we're talking about with the Temple Others already. We don't need to go too deep into it. I think that we're all in agreement here that it's no good.
Not to mention, I just don't like the explanation as well of the reason why I pretend I don't speak English is to remain separate from the people I'm in charge of, right? This idea of if they complain about the decisions I make, if I pretend I don't understand them, then they can't complain. I don't know, man. That's how you get a mutiny on your hands, in my opinion. If they're like, oh, we could easily trick this guy. He doesn't speak English. He doesn't know what's going on. It just seems like Dogen's a terrible leader. I think I can finally say it. Just after everything he's been doing in this episode, he has no idea what he's doing. I think he's become very lucky that the Temple Others have such abundantly blind faith that they're like, sure, Dogen, we'll listen to you. We'll do whatever you want. Considering that he is ruling on such a flimsy premise and is doing so many things wrong in trying to convince people to do things that I think he got extraordinarily lucky he was saddled with a bunch of dinguses walking around barefoot in the temple.
Yeah, my gosh, I really dislike it. Anyway, well, we're not finished with them just yet. In the final sideways scene of the episode, a detective shows up looking for Joan Hart. Do we have to put sideways Joan Hart on the Kate alias list?
I don't know, because she's technically only used, I guess, do we count that as if she was taking on an identity, maybe this is just making it easier for us, I would say so, but I feel like in this case, she's not, right? If she was being Joan Hart, the cab driver, I would say maybe, if there was a story behind it, but if it's just, hey, I'm signing in here so nobody knows Kate Austin signed in, then I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I think I'm fine to just, loop it in with the classic Joan Hart. I don't really need the alias. Either way, yeah. Kate and Claire are going to say ta-ta for now, not forever. They will still have some time together here in the Sideways, but it is the end of the Sideways storyline. Let's listen in. Sound 8.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you. Why are they after you? What did you do?
Would you believe me if I said I was innocent?
Yeah, I would.
I should go.
Oh, wait,
here, take my credit card.
No.
There's not much of a limit on it, but something.
You don't have to do this.
You didn't have to do what you did either.
Aaron's a great name.
I don't know why I said it. It's like, I don't know, I knew it or something.
I think you should keep him.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. Me too.
Thanks.
I think this is a really sweet scene.
Yeah, I do. Because we've been spending all of this time trying to get these two characters back together. And like, we're not there in like the way that it's supposed to go down, on the island in island time quite yet. We've still got some work to do there. But like, knowing that like Kate's journey has been trying to get to Claire for so long, and having them have this moment together that is so about, you know, this child that they both care about so much in their living life, and clearly still care about so much in this world as well, I think is a really, really nice thing. I think it is the best sideways scene of the episode for sure.
Yeah, I really love this connection over the name Aaron. Again, it's just this recollection, right? This gut feeling between the two of, this was the right name. And even though Kate's not saying like, oh, this woman's fundamentally important, I need to stay around her, it's more so, yeah, it feels like a good name. I don't know why. And I think it really calls back to, again, despite the fact that it's been such a long time since these two women have had a scene together, you know, this is Kate's motivation. It's going to be her motivation for the entirety of season six. They have such tied destinies between this child that I think him serving as the connector, because let's remember, you know, what's going to wake Kate up doesn't have anything to do with someone like Jack or Sawyer. It's going to be Aaron being born. I think that's a great reminder about how complete Kate's arc is. And I would also say, I think from a sideways perspective, this is a great introduction to Claire. We'll get more into the Claire of it all coming up in season six and whether or not her on-island introduction necessarily works, but I really like how they introduce her in the sideways. I know it was a big deal that Emily Darabin was coming back for season six, and I think this is a really great way to reintroduce us to the Claire character, even though it's, you know, under much different circumstances than the way she is on the island.
Yeah, I think like getting a little bit of classic Claire is nice, and I think Emily DeRavin still's got it. She still got it, you know. Like, I think she still has that Claire.
Though I'm sure she's not happy to be like, oh crap, I got to strap on the pregnant belly again for the first time since 2004.
Yeah. She's got to put it back on. Back on island time, Kate fills up her canteen. Sawyer goes inside. We will check back in with Sawyer next week, the substitute. Going to be a great time. Really looking forward to that. Jack is going to drink some tea. Ted Lasso would spit it out with Dogan and Lennon.
Maybe Dogan would make him spit it out because that's also poison.
Yeah. He says, why would you want to kill Saeed? And Dogan says, we believe he has been. And he says a word that I hear as misunderstood-aloo. Lennon says that the closest translation is he's been claimed.
Yes, there's a darkness growing in him, and once it reaches his heart, everything your friend once was will be gone.
And how do you know that? Because it happened to your sister. Bum, bum, bum.
And then this is where we get Claire. Squirrel baby Claire gets introduced here, where Aldo and Justin are able to somehow, I mean, I guess Justin was the tracker, if they're able to somehow find Jin, despite the fact that, like, he's probably a miles away from where they got knocked out. Aldo basically says, people won't pay no mind if we just leave a body in the jungle. And Justin is going to make a reference to something that's going to start to get introduced as soon as next episode, right? This idea of he's one of them. Jin's going to make a break for it, run into a freaking bear trap. I mean, I know we talk about Claire being the new Rousseau, but Claire's traps are much, much, much more extreme than Rousseau's ever were.
They're very intense, but one thing that Claire has that Rousseau didn't is a direct alliance with the Man in Black. So the Man in Black's probably like, oh, no, you got, I know where there's some bear traps. Like, this shit will really hurt. Like,
right, because, like, I would imagine that, you know, he went to Hydra Island to pick some up, or she did. Yeah, Rousseau can't sneak into Hydra Island to grab things for the polar bears or anything.
Correct. So Claire shows up, mercifully kills Aldo, instant LVP point. I appreciate the assist from Claire. And she shoots Justin, who is not killed, though he's going to pretend to be killed, but it's not going to work. And then Jin sees that it's Claire, and there she is with the wig. Danielle Rousseau is dead. Long live Danielle Rousseau. That is what Kate does.
Yes.
That's the episode.
So I guess this goes, bears, you know, repeating, Josh, from the beginning of this episode. Is this your least favorite episode of season six?
So far, yeah. And so, like, I had given Across the Sea the ceremonial 2.3. It really just doesn't sit with me to put what Kate does higher than Across the Sea, because I think at least Across the Sea is interesting and aiming for something, and I really don't know what this is aiming for. This, like, feels like it's like, it feels fillerish, you know, like it feels like, all right, we're still just trying to figure out what we want to do here, which is a show's right to like take a little bit of time to figure out how they want their season to shake out. And there's like very, very real, you know, production realities that are facing everybody that like they got to get the scripts out. They got to start churning it around, all of that stuff. But I feel like, man, for the final season, like, you gotta, you know, you can't miss. Like, I mean, like, you don't have to, like, hit, you know, dead center bullseye, but, like, you can't miss this wildly. And I think that this is, like, it's not a good episode of the show. It is, like, in the conversation for me of, like, one of, like, the worst episodes of the show is what Kate does. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff in here that I really enjoy.
That's with every episode of Lost.
You know, no episode of Lost is, like, a total, like, throw it out, burn it with fire. Not even fire plus water, right? Like, not even whatever the case may be. Like, there's always something in these episodes that makes me happy to have watched it. I would prefer to have watched it than to not have watched it. And I think in the case here, that Sawyer and Kate scene on the dock especially is just, like, so excellent that this is going to boost this past the level of like my lowest of the low episodes, which was which is the combination platter of Whatever the Case May Be and Adrift, but just a scooch above that and just a scooch below Across the Sea for me. I'm giving What Kate Does a 2.2. I'm trying to be harsh now so to like make some of like the highs of some of the things that are to come hopefully like stand out a little bit more. But I also just like have to be honest, like if I gave Whatever the Case May Be that low of a score, like how am I not giving What Kate Does like a fairly comparable score? And I just don't find it anywhere near as interesting as Across the Sea. So it's, I hate doing it, but ultimately it's a relatively easy call to give this a pretty low 2.2.
Yeah, so I'm going to be in the same boat as you, actually. I'm going to give it a 2.2 as we're leaving this ferry dock together. I still like it better than Across the Sea, because I think while Across the Sea is more interesting, Across the Sea has more misses, in my opinion, than What Kate Does. I would say What Kate Does is a safe episode that fails versus Across the Sea, which tries to accomplish way too much and fails. But I would say comparing it to other episodes, you know, I initially gave this a 2.5, which I would put on the same level as Born to Run. But I think Born to Run has stronger stuff in it. While there is some frustrating on-island stuff, I really like the build-up to the raft launch. I think the flashback is really keen. I still think that the Flash Sideways stuff is probably the strongest material here. But that being said, it's still not incredibly strong. I think there's a lot of suspect circumstances that you have to kind of explain away. I think it's great to see Claire again, but I would not say it's as pivotal stuff to the character of Kate and her arc than something like Born to Run. So I shifted it down a little bit. I was thinking about, I gave the Other Woman a 2.3. I gave Whatever the Case May Be a 2.1. I think it's somewhere in between. So I ended up going with a 2.2. I think The Other Woman is an episode that I enjoyed watching more, that I became less frustrated by. And Whatever the Case May Be, I think much like What Kate Does, has some good character stuff in it. Like that's those C&D plots, but I think it unfortunately gets marred by a lot of the like frustrating character moments, as well as just really not moving the plot forward in any way, shape, or form. So I think it's going to settle there for me. Like you said, a little bit more of a mix from the Hatchlings. I have seen as low as, I think actually we might be, no, I've seen a 1.9.
A couple 1.9s, I see.
A couple 1.9s, and I've seen as high as a 3.5. And so that's going to put it at a 2.41, which actually ties it right now with Across the Sea at number 2 for season 6 so far.
Yeah. You know what? Give me Across the Sea every day of the week because it's interesting. Like, I would rather like a bold failure than sort of like a tepid failure, I think. Like a failure that's trying than like an episode that's just sort of there. And especially in the final season. And I almost feel like I should have this lower than Whatever the Case May Be in Adrift. But I'm just going to I'll stay where I am. It's fine. I'll keep it at a 2.2. But like, there is a piece of me that's like, I feel like this is an episode I would prefer to watch less than those two. But I don't know. I'm just going to keep it where it is. Okay, well, let's get into the feedback, Mike. We got a little bit to go through from Joanne, the Pistons fan, your friend and mine. Joanne writes in and asks, are characters like Arst and Froger truly in the Flash Sideways universe, or are they just constructs put there by our main characters? An interesting question. Mike, I know that Damon Lindelof just did an interview with The Storm, which finished their Lost rewatch recently.
Which is great, because Damon Lindelof also revealed that he not only was a guest, but a Storm listener as well. And God help you, Damon Lindelof, if you actually listen to Down the Hatch. Like,
we're so sorry.
We're so sorry.
We love you. We just bagged an episode of your show. We love the show so much. My God.
Let's be candid. He never made it past DJ Dom. He listens to us play eight times in a row. He's like, let's get
we
these jamokes out of my
That's
ears.
That's fine. It's totally fine. But I believe I haven't had a chance to listen to the interview yet. And I don't know when I will. Things are just really busy right now. I heard like a little bit. I read there was like a Reddit post on the Lost subreddit that was like summarizing a couple of the big takeaways from that interview, one of which I believe was something akin to like every main character like had their own Flash Sideways universe, basically, and like the one that we're seeing is Jax. I don't want to like misrepresent what he said, certainly without having listened to it. That is my understanding based on like the secondhand accounting of it. So I don't know. And then like if that is sort of like the writer perspective and something that would be something fairly new that Damon is talking about now, that I think would be worth some examination at a certain point. But if it were something like that, then yeah, like I think, some of these people being constructs would make some measure of sense that these aren't like, it's not actually Arst and Froger, it's like what Kate and Claire perceive of as Arst and Froger.
That's my logic, is that I think everyone who was in the church, sans Ben, I guess, created that world. And it sucks, because that's a little Arst X-esque right from Exposé, right, of all these people are out doing all these things, that all that matters is them. And that is sort of like the solipsistic worldview that they are literally building in The Flash Sideways, is that I do believe that it was built by committee, but only among these characters. And so I do think the constructs of literally everyone else, except those who end up in the church, again, and Ben, I think are just avatars.
From the legendary birthday king, Eric Divestein, Eric writes in and says, Claire's decision to invite her carjacker to meet with her potential baby adopter seems very odd. Do you think her real consciousness has started to awaken and given her the feeling that Kate is important to her baby?
I don't know if it's starting to awaken as much as, again, we all get these weird sort of gut feelings, right? This idea of, I don't know why, but I just feel like, I mean, to be fair, Kate also, I wouldn't say reciprocated, but did oddly come back and be like, can I give you a ride somewhere after pushing you out of this car? So I think Claire is also feeling very vulnerable too. I think it's a combination of her characteristics and probably the gut feeling of, this is probably somebody I should trust, as odd as that is to say in this world.
Yeah. I think that there could be something there. Like, I think like there are these moments of people like getting closer and closer, but we're not seeing like any of that Flash stuff, right? Like, we're not seeing any of like those, you know, like the glimpses of the quote unquote island world, like the real world. So I don't know. I think that there could be some, I think that there's certainly some measure of drift, right? People are kind of like getting caught in each other's orbit caught in each other's nets, as it were. From the great Brendan Fitzpatrick, Fitzy says the temple plotline would have been so much better if they had just told the candidates what was going on and why they needed to stay. And you get the sense that they know what the candidates are, right? I mean, if Aldo seems to know, if Justin and Aldo seem to be like, he may be one of them, then like, and also, again, a retroactive demerit for Richard Alpert for not knowing about these things.
It's just like, it just really goes to show, just a life lesson. Communication is key. Like, don't get it away on either petty high school bullshit and be like, oh, I'm not going to tell anybody to, you know, I don't want to tell this person to piss them off, even though they'll find out anyway. Or try to keep up this guise of mysteriousness. Since chances are, if you want to convince somebody to do something, you have to present them with, like, a logical, cogent argument, right? Josh, you and I have watched so much reality TV that we know that is how you make a pitch. That is how you convince someone to vote with you in a game like Survivor. It's not to be like, oh, you have to do this thing. I won't tell you why or two or what, but just do this thing. No, usually if you come to them, give them much more specifics, they're going to be able to digest those facts and move forward with it rather than just blindly following you. So yeah, it's a huge demerit in the category of the AOJs of just saying, no, just go with it. Trust me. You got to trust me on this one. We just met earlier today, but I think you should believe me on this one. Please poison your friend.
And then lastly, we asked last time if anybody had theories about the sunken island and trying to like make sense of that for the sake of the show. We got a couple of hits on that. I want to read two of them. One is from your friend and mine, the legendary Joe Garfine, who wrote to us on Twitter and said, I interpreted the sunken island to be a collective wish from the afterlife island folks that no one else has to experience what they did to get to where they are now. That time was the most important they spent together, but that location, mostly bad memories and experiences.
I really love this read. This idea of like, it was a sucky experience, but it was a necessary experience. And almost like that underwater landscape is a monument to the island, right? How important it was, but the fact that in this world it does not exist, I think is a really fun idea. Could it have been improved by better CGI?
Maybe,
absolutely.
Maybe.
But that also does beg the question, though, because I do recall that Benjamin Linus did live on the island for some portion of time, did he not? I'm pretty sure in the Flash Sideways world, he says that he lived on the island briefly with Roger when he worked with the Dharma Initiative. So was this another island? Was this the exact copy of the island? Was this a Bopo island, a clone island?
I mean, for him, that location obviously was still crucial. So, like, if that's the case, you know, and, like, maybe it sunk because he blew it. I don't know. We'll get there when we get there. Jennifer wrote in as well, being pretty thumbs down on the scene itself, but offered an explanation for it. Jennifer says, concisely, the island is irrelevant. In this new sideways world, it doesn't even exist. No one is searching for it. No one is stranded on it. No one is looking to go back to it. No one is tortured by the trauma of it. Perhaps the function of this reveal is to inform the viewers to, quote unquote, let go. It's all about the characters now.
Yeah, I like that idea, too. This was foundationally important. It doesn't need to be the focus of this, right? For lack of a better term, it's not about the island and its mysteries. It's about the people, much like the show proper. So I like what that represents. The more that I think about it and the more that I talk about it. This is why I love the Hatchlings, too. You and I come in with our dumb thoughts of like, oh, why did they do this? And then people come in with really smart ideas about it. And we are eternally grateful for that.
Let's get into the MVP, LVPs. I've got three LVPs and you've got two. You've got three MVPs. I've got two. The LVPs are easiest to do. Really, really quickly, you and I both dumped on Dogen and Aldo each, and I gave a bonus shot to Lennon for being rendered useless by Dogen's decision to speak English. To speak English to the rest of the cast. Lennon literally has no purpose now. So it's a double Dogen, double Aldo with a shot of Lennon.
Yeah, these two are the worst, between Aldo just being a big brutish a-hole and Dogen trying and failing to manipulate Jack. That's the other thing as well, is like, you can say what you want to about his motivations and his methods, but the fact of the matter is, Jack sees completely through his BS. And so it really is impossible to not give him a good amount of LVP points this episode for what he attempts to do.
Yeah, so we have Lennon and Dogen are trying to play catch up with Mother's negative five, Dogen at negative three, Aldo at negative two, but he won't progress.
I think Dogen's going to pass Mother.
I think so. I think it's likely. I think Lennon may as well. Lennon currently has negative two, but we've got more time to spend with both of these guys. The MVPs are spread out. Unique MVP points for all five categories, for all five spots. Mike, you've got three, so why don't you start us off?
I'm going to give one to Jack to start it off here, because like I said before, I think Jack has a really subtly big episode here. I think it's an important lesson for him to learn. The fact he's able to call Dogen's bluff, the fact that he's able to have the correct read and not kill Saeed by giving him poison. I think this is actually a good episode for Jack, both from an arc perspective and from like a character's behaving well perspective.
Yeah, I love that. My two kind of go in tandem with each other, so I'll just do them both in one shot. Sawyer and Kate. I think that they both have such an excellent scene together on the pier. Sawyer, like, first of all, Sawyer being able to just like continuously beast mode the temple others and escape from the temple. And then
all off screen again.
And then Kate being able to convince the temple others, like, let me go. And she succeeds at that. I mean, should that be a demerit against the temple others, or is it a point in favor of Kate? I'm giving it as a point in favor of Kate. But it is strengthened in both of those cases by the incredible acting from both Josh Holloway and Evangeline Lily in that scene on the pier. And then I guess, like, to further underscore why Kate is getting an MVP point this week, is it should be a demerit against Law and Order, and perhaps tactically not wise for Kate to return to the scene of the crime with the taxi cab, but she gets away with it. So I'm happily giving Sawyer and Kate both an MVP point. This episode is not good, but I don't blame it on Evangeline Lily or Kate as a character.
Yeah, I think the Kate sideways is more of a wash, but I guess if Kate on island is more of a net positive, then that makes sense. And let me go with two people for their more so sideways performances in this episode, though. So I'm going to give my first one to Claire, which I think also comes a bit in at the end. Like, I'm going to give Claire kudos for the fact that she kills Aldo and able to knock
Thank
out Justin. Like,
that.
Pretty badass. But also, I'm happy to welcome back Emily DeRavin. I think she's able to, you know, be a good buddy to Kate by not ratting her out to the cops when she very easily could do so, considering she carjacked her and is a wanted murderer. And I'm going to give a point, mommy excluded, to Ethan for being able to do his job, be a good doctor, calm Claire down, also for offering her the choice, right? Like, being very simple with, hey, this is what you can do. You don't need to if you don't want to, but I just want to present you the opportunity to do so. Like, I think actually Ethan as a doctor is arguably better than Jack as a doctor sometimes in terms of a bedside manner. So again, strike mommy from the record, and I think it's an even better episode for Ethan, but he does some good stuff here.
So we are at Smoke Monster still, the King of the Ring for season 6 with 4 points total, and that may go up next week with the substitute. But we got a couple of people in the twos. John Locke from the Sideways is coming in strong with 2 points, as well as his brief appearance in Across the Sea. And who are you going to give MVP points to there otherwise? Sawyer has 2, Jack has 2, and then a whole mess of ones. Kate's on the board. Saeed's on the board. Claire's on the board. Hurley's on the board. Not going to get Ethan again, but he's on the board, and so is Claudia, the original mother. So it is it's a diverse lineup that we've got here right now, and it'll be interesting to see how this moves going forward. Next week is the substitute. It is about Terry O'Quinn.
Like, yes.
You know, it is a yep, Terry O'Quinn episode.
Yeah, we've taken a brief respite from John Loki, right, after his big mask-off moment. He gets a week off, but now he comes back in full force. He's got several plans in motion. He's trying to recruit Richard Alpert. He's trying to recruit Sawyer. And, I mean, this is going to be a big episode. This is going to be the reveal of the cave, and we'll obviously find out much more about that in Lighthouse coming up afterwards. But like you said, we also get some John Locke stuff. We find out that yes, his life is slightly better than it was on in our timeline, but not that much. Poor John Locke is unfortunately going to get some other bad things served to him over the course of the substitute.
Yeah, I think a really strong episode. One of my favorite season 6 episodes coming up next week, so I'm really, really hyped to get into it. So get your feedback in down the hatch at postshowrecaps.com. That is always the best way to send in your stuff. Down the hatch at postshowrecaps.com for all things The Substitute coming your way next week, next Friday, coming 2 days early for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. One of the many perks that you get for signing up for the Patreon. You get Down the Hatch a couple of days early. You also get to watch the episodes of Lost alongside myself and Mike if you are a member at the Discord level. So consider signing up, patreon.com/Post post-show recaps. The one-year anniversary of the post-show recaps Patreon program is just around the corner.
Aww.
It's all month long in October. We would appreciate it so much to see you around our parts during that month. So if you're like thinking about it, you want to wait until October, totally get it. But we'd love to see you if you're thinking about it. It would mean the world to us and all of the work that we're doing over here. So consider it. Mike Bloom, anything else?
No, I mean, if you're listening to this, depending on when you are, another island show that has not sunk so much is coming back, Survivor 41. I'm doing a butt ton of coverage for that. I've already done so much preseason stuff for it. I'll be doing Exit Press. I'll be doing podcasts for it as well. So, hey, if you're into more island-based shows, we're not going much of the sideways, though I think actually we might be seeing some off-island footage for the first time in Survivor 41. But be sure to check that out if you're interested. Otherwise, lots of Big Brother stuff as well as we're closing up the season. And if we're talking about other scripted stuff, I was on the Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good podcast this past week doing a Brant Steele. You know we love a Brant Steele here on PSR, of Curb Your Enthusiasm characters. So again, it's very extracurricular since I know we're going to school next week. But if you have any interest in that, check out all the stuff that I'm doing at A Mike Bloom Type.
Oh my God. All right. And I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back next week with the substitute, except no substitute. There is only one down the hatch and it's coming your way next week. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye bye.
University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.